I was Britain's youngest pilot. Member John Walton, 89, shares his story of learning to fly at just 17 and joining Blind Veterans UK in later life. At 7 o'clock on an early spring morning in 1950, a young Air Training Corps, ATC cadet, set off from his home in Newlyn, Cornwall, to RAF White Waltham near Maidenhead for an interview. At the age of 15, after gaining his glider pilot's licence, his commanding officer had told him about a new scholarship scheme allowing selected cadets to fly powered aircraft. He could not apply quickly enough. I'm writing about him because it feels like a different lifetime now. That lad was, in fact, me. After the medical came the interview, and I was shown into an office where the group captain was seated. He introduced himself, and I was thrilled to find he was one of my wartime heroes, the legendary Cat's Eyes Cunningham, Britain's top-scoring night fighter ace. I was in awe. It was difficult to answer his questions at first, until he put me at ease. I was told that I would hear within a fortnight if I'd been successful, and was sent home to wait. I met the postman every day until finally he thrust a buff envelope into my hand, asking, "Is this what you're waiting for?" I jumped for joy when I opened it. I had been awarded a scholarship. I started my training at Plymouth and District Aero Club at Roeborough. This was when I was introduced to Flight Lieutenant Lockwood, who would be my instructor, and to the Tiger Moth biplane, GAHVV, which I would soon be flying. Although the weather was poor, the Moth was pushed out onto the tarmac. Mr. Lockwood talked through what was expected of me and gave me the course books I needed to study for a private pilot's licence. The following day, I was taught how to perform the exterior inspections of the aircraft. Then, at last, we climbed in and went through all the start-up and pre-flight checks before we set off for my first experience under dual instruction. I had to learn how to taxi the Moth because it's flown from the rear seat and there is no view immediately in front. There is no rear wheel, only a metal skid and no brakes. I taxied it to the end of the field, then, with my hands and feet on the controls to follow his movements, Mr. Lockwood took off, talking me through everything he was doing. In those days, communication between instructor and pupil was by means of a simple speaking tube. There was no radio for external communication from the aircraft, so a careful study of the signal square markings on the tarmac was necessary before landing. We flew this way a few times more until one day he uttered those never-to-be-forgotten words, "You have control, don't bend her." He climbed out. This was the moment. I looked at his empty seat, took a deep breath, lined her up and opened the throttle. I didn't have time to be scared. I circled the field and made a good landing. I had made my first solo flight after just 8 hours of dual instruction. Over the next weeks, I was taught aerobatics and forced landings, and I also flew cross-country to Weston-super-Mare and on to Filton in Bristol, where I taxied literally under the nose of the world's biggest aircraft at that time, the Bristol Brabazon, and then to Exeter, where I landed behind three Spitfires before heading home. I was granted my private pilot's licence number 33146, on the 29th of June 1951, aged 17, thus becoming Britain's youngest pilot at that time. Within 12 months, I'd enrolled in the RAF and volunteered for air crew training. After restoring old photographs some years ago, my curiosity was sparked as to whether the vintage aircraft was still in existence. So after trying various means, bingo, I found it on the internet. I travelled to see it with my son, but unfortunately arrived too late, as someone had crashed it. By this time, I was widowed and had recently lost my sight. The first eye was due to a history of glaucoma, then cataracts, and a mistake by a surgeon. The other went very suddenly when I was in my early 80s. One minute, I was watching the rugby on TV with my son, and the next, I was in darkness, completely black blind. However, two fantastic things came from this. Firstly, I met a wonderful eye surgeon called Mr. Tu, who was determined to help me. And secondly, I joined Blind Veterans UK. Although Mr. Tu's first attempt at a corneal transplant didn't work, he kept in touch with me and a few years later asked if he could try again. 3 weeks after the second surgery, I was invited to the Llandudno Centre for my introductory week. There had been no change in my sight, so I just assumed that was that. The surgery hadn't worked again. But then on day four of my stay, the nurse came in to wake me and pulled the curtains back. Amazingly, I could perceive a lightness in the room. I walked to the window and could see the vague outline of a tree outside. It was like a miracle. Word soon spread around the centre, of course, and as I walked into the dining room for breakfast, I was greeted with applause. It was incredibly emotional. That whole week, I felt surrounded by love. I will never forget it. So, I have a little sight now. Not enough to identify faces, but I can see shapes and shadows. I was taught how to use a white cane at Llandudno, so now I venture out on my own. The first time was frightening because I got a bit lost, but it gets easier. I love the independence it gives me. I'd like to finish with a special thanks to my Blind Veterans UK volunteer, Brenda, whose support really makes all the difference. Being referred to this charity was one of the best things to have ever happened to me, and I couldn't be more grateful for all the support I've received.